Welcome in to Gwen and Chris, Tony Gwynn Jr., Chris Ello, Matt Scraby on this Thursday afternoon. Padres with an off day, so you get 4 hours of your boys. And so Padres coming off of a victory in the day game yesterday. They won the series versus the Cincinnati Reds. So 2 of 3 there. So good news on that front. Gentlemen, how are you guys doing today?
Hello, Tony Gwynn Jr. How's Arizona? I hope it's bee-free.
Yeah, for now.
For now.
Yeah,
so for now. You're safe.
That's what happens when you try to have nice things in Arizona. Like, normally that roof is closed, and you know, you don't have to worry about it. But, you know, it's a nice day outside. They wanted to have the roof open, and boom. Bees not only come into the stadium, but they decide to park at, like, the most difficult spot on the field to actually remove them.
Yeah, so are you bringing any gear, you and Jesse, tomorrow night? Are you going to take your chances?
I'm taking my chances.
Yeah.
I'm taking my chances.
I would do. I want to thank the Padres for putting the sky back up where it belongs because it had fallen after the 5-game losing streak and 2 nice wins. I think makes everybody feel a whole lot better. It doesn't solve everything, but it's nice to... you know, it's nice to talk about some good things that happened the last couple of days. And, you know, I think most importantly is that both you, Darvish, and Joe Musgrove pitched good games. And if they can get consistent like they normally are, and you get what you've been getting from Dylan Cease, by and large, you know, it gives your starting rotation a chance to get on a little bit of a roll here. You know, I was looking at the statistics, Tony, and statistics are just that, but... Right now, the Padres starters rank 3rd from the bottom in the National League in ERA. And the only 2 teams lower than them are, God forbid, the Rockies and the Marlins. So Padres starting pitching needs to be, you know, more consistent. And I don't think that this staff belongs in the company of the Marlins and the Rockies. I think they're a whole lot better than that. And, you know, I think once they get a little more consistent and healthy and everybody starts pitching well, you know, you're going to see this team string together some wins.
Yeah, I mean, we knew that. I mean, I think
this team has
kind of always been largely focused on, you know, if the starting pitching is good, the Padres are going to be in every ballgame. And we saw that the week before last when they went up to L.A. and then they went to Milwaukee. You saw some good starts in there, and you know, you had your best week of the season there. And so you know, hopefully you had the 4th time round through the rotation,
right?
At least with everybody in it. And Darv looked good in his short stint, 5 innings of work. He was sharp. And then Joe followed it up yesterday. He was good, man. It was back to seeing Joe. I know after the game he said he's still in between on the slider, but you know what? His curveball is really, really good right now, and his velocity was up yesterday. And it's just, you know, it's amazing how much, you know, because overall his velocity I think was up like a 0.5 mile per hour, but it was a crispiness to that fastball. And he located the fastball, which when he's doing that, honestly, I don't know that it matters as much what his velocity is. And he did a lot of that yesterday. It was just really good to see those 2 guys kind of get moving in the direction I think they both feel like they should be in.
Yeah, a couple things about Musgrove. One thing, and this just amazes me, Tony, sometimes about how good major league hitters are. Because we talk about all the time how tough it is to hit a baseball. The 1 home run that was hit by Spencer Steer in the 1st inning yesterday, they showed the replay of it. The ball dotted the box, you know, the little strike zone box. The ball dotted that right in the very center. And it just goes to show if you miss your spot against these guys, the ball leaves the ballpark. I mean, it's unbelievable because you're right. The rest of the day, Musgrove was hitting, you know,
that was the only bad. That was the only
right.
That was the only bad breaking ball he threw all game.
Threw 1 bad breaking ball and left the ballpark. So that shows the kind of margin for error some of these starting pitchers have. But you're right. The rest of that, I think Joe could have even gone into the 7th inning, but Mike Shildt, you know, wanted to leave it with a good taste and a good solid 6. And, you know, obviously Jerks and Profar was heroic yesterday. Even Jake Cronenworth, who hit the Grand Slam, said, you know, it started with Profar. And, you know, 4 for 4 days, nothing to sneeze at. That is so tough. So tough. And, you know, I mean, you're playing with these shifts and they've got the scouting. You got to get 4 line drives to fall in somewhere in the playing field. And he did that. I was only disappointed that in the bottom of the 8th inning, nobody got on base because he was 4th up that inning. I wanted to see him go for a 5 for 5 and be able to experience something your dad did 7 times during his career. Scraby and I looked that up yesterday.
3 times in the 1993 season.
Yeah. It just goes to show how difficult 5 for 5 is. You got to get up 5 times. But Profar, you know, he was great yesterday. And I thought, you know, I sent you a text after the game. Just your comment on poor Graham Ashcraft, who barely even throws a changeup, tried to sneak a changeup by Profar because nothing else was getting him out. And you pointed that out beautifully as Profar knocked in 2 runs with a single. You know, that's how good he is right now. Pitchers are trying stuff they don't even have in their repertoire to get him out.
No, you know, I think on his list of, I think it was like 5 pitches, he threw the changeup at like a 4% clip. Like, he wasn't throwing it very often. And he had tried everything else. He tried the cutter. He tried to fastball up. He tried to spin it. And my man Pro, he's just so dialed in right now, swinging the bat. It's actually fun to watch a hitter like that, like the way he's swinging it, where it's not necessarily power, you know, trying to hit the ball out of the ballpark. He's just taking what the pitcher's given. And when it's in the zone, his swing, his timing is just on point. It's a lot of fun to watch. He has pretty much hit wherever Mike Shield has asked him to hit. I see you guys went, Scray went and pulled some of these numbers in terms of the batting average. I mean, when he was hitting .600, he was .278 with almost a .400 on base percentage. He slugged over .450. Batting 5th, he hit .314. Everywhere in the lineup, batting 4th, .286. Batting 3rd, .300, .417, .300. And then, obviously, leading off, he's just, you know, the perfect leadoff hitter at this point. And so, you know, there's some good things. I think we'd be remiss if I didn't bring up Tyler Wade once again. I mean, whether it was Tuesday night, the kind of soft liner he got things rolling in that big inning, or whether it was yesterday, his bunt that gets over the pitcher's head gets things rolling in that big inning. And so, like, it's not just him at the bottom of the lineup. It seems like it's been a bunch of guys who have done it. But it goes back to what you started this conversation on. All that kind of stuff has mostly been happening offensively. But the pitching part, if that's not right, it won't necessarily matter. And in the last 2 games, the pitching part's been right. The bullpen has been right behind it. And you get 2 victories because of it.
Yeah, and I understand the Padres catch a break to begin the Arizona series because they're going to scratch Zach Gallen from that game tomorrow night.
Oh, wow.
I don't know whether he'll be able to.
B delay?
I don't know, but he was supposed to start game one of the series. He's now being moved back maybe to Sunday, maybe not in the series at all.
Oh, wow. Because Jordan Montgomery, I'm not joking, he get scratched because of the B delay. So he pitched last night.
Right, they moved him back, but they moved Gallen, you know, to Friday, and I thought, well, that's bad luck because he always seems to have success against the Padres.
That's not necessarily a fun matchup right there.
No, but...
So the Padres are catching some breaks here, at least as it pertains, and this obviously, it's on paper. You still got to go out and win the game. But Gallen's down. Merrill is also on the IL, I believe.
Who's this? And then, our guy? No, Merrill Kelly.
Merrill
not
Kelly.
Jackson Merrill.
I almost just my heart just stopped.
Don't you know what? I gotta log that in the brain there. Oof. Now that we got 2 Merrills, you know, I thought that might be a okay. You're right.
I just almost passed out, Tony.
I don't know why that would then be like a break though. So you know,
nonetheless,
Merrill Kelly's out. You got now Zach Gallen's out. I know Carroll's not swinging a bat. I think he's below 200 right now. So
yeah, don't wake him up.
You're catching these guys maybe at the right time too, and that's part of all of this.
Yeah, they're not playing well, and Padres got to make sure they get in and out of town without waking them up and, you know, try to keep this going a little bit. Let's go back to, I'm just curious your thoughts on Mike's show. We've talked about it on all three talk shows for pretty much two straight days, and we went through it today on the roundtable, which you guys will all be able to hear later on in the 5 o'clock hour. But Mike Schilt's decision the other night to, you know, take the run off the board, let Manny Machado try to eat with the bases loaded. And first of all, Tony, did you even know that Mike Schilt had a choice? And that's not because I don't know anybody who even knew that, including Mike Winters, who told us he'd never seen that happen in his entire 40 years of baseball umpiring.
I actually, after I figured out what was going on, I actually did know that rule. I was in triple, you know, in the minor leagues, you kind of learn some of these.
If you're
searching, you can learn some of these type of rules. And I'm, you know, Mike Winters will probably tell you if we ever have him on. I ask a lot of questions I've always been interested in a lot of those rules. So coming through the minor leagues, I used to ask those questions. I remember one of my coaches told me that, you know, if there's a runner on, let's say you know, catcher's interference, ball gets in play, you have the choice to take the end result of that play.
Right.
Or you, in this case, you could send the guy back and have the runner, have it be the dead ball, just the catcher's interference, basically.
Sure.
And so initially when it was happening on the field, obviously I didn't know what was happening, but we luckily had Mike Winters like right there to be able to explain it in real time what was happening. And so that answers your question. Did I know initially? I didn't figure, once I figured out what was going on, yes, I did remember. Right. I knew that rule.
Now, did you think that this was a no-brainer for Mike Schilt to show faith in his player? Or, you know, this was, during the middle of this five-game losing streak where they're struggling to score runs, taking a run off the board, would you have considered that?
It was clearly a no-brainer for Mike Schilt because he was out of the dugout, I think, before we even collected what the actual rule was happening at that point.
He's like, hey, wait a minute, put them bases loaded, I want Manny up.
And, I know in real time it's like, huh? We're going to give that run back?
Right.
Who gives runs back?
Yeah, Nobody gives runs back. It was a fireable offense in my eyes.
I'm sure Scravey felt that way.
And, you know, quite frankly, I'm sure there was a lot of people feeling that way. But I think there's so many more positives that come out of it if it goes right, especially for a team like the Pods who had been struggling at that point. Your best hitter, the dude that, you know, everybody looks to, you basically just told him in front of everybody, I believe you. Go ahead and get this done.
Yeah.
And he didn't waste no time. First pitch hacking, slashed that double, cleared the bases. And, you know, part of being a good manager is pushing the right buttons at the right time. And that clearly was pushing the buttons at the right time. And he was rewarded. And listen, he didn't look like he was stressed about it at all. He certainly made the call with it really fast. So he saw it happen. Once he realized it was catcher's interference, he knew the rule and he didn't hesitate.
Yeah. Well, I think he had to do it. And, you know, because you got to show belief in your players. And he did. And a lot of managers say, I believe in my players. But they don't really get a chance to show that belief in their players during the course of a game. Mike Schilt had the chance, and he showed it,
Here's the other thing. I've certainly played with guys that I don't know they would have taken offense to it, but the following day, they'd have been like, "What, Skip, you didn't think I could have came through right there and unloaded the base?" And it might have been in a joking matter at the time, but that's something that's planted in the back of your mind. And so I thought he did the right thing there.
No doubt about it. And the other thing that I really enjoyed, how many times do you and I and Scraby and the fans, we watch, let's say, an NFL football game, and we feel like a coach makes a decision not based on what's the best thing to do, but based on where he'll catch the least amount of flack if it doesn't work.
Definitely
well, the
happens.
best In that case, Mike Schilt would have taken the run because he would have caught the least amount of flack. But he was willing to put it out there. And, you know, if Manny would have hit into a double play, Mike Schilt would have taken full responsibility for that. So,
sure would have.
You know, he has proven to me, you know, sticking up for Jerickson when he got tossed a couple weeks ago, he's proven to me that if you, you know, he's got his players' backs 120%, and you want to go after one of the Padre players, you're going to have to go after Mike Schilt, too.
Yeah.
He is clearly, you know, to me, given his team that message here in April, and I think it's going to reward him and them as the season goes.
His attention to detail, as we've discussed, even these type of things, he's just very dialed in and in tune with what's going on, what his team needs, the right buttons to push. And so, you know, when you get a good pitching like this, you know, all of a sudden you look like a genius again.
You look like you know what you're doing. Yes, that always happens. When you go to the bullpen and the guy comes in and strikes everyone out, you look like you're pretty smart.
Exactly. All right, let's we're off and rolling today. Let's get to break. I'm not sure where we're going at this point. We got the NBA, we got this series with the Diamondbacks coming up. Got a lot on our plate here for the next 3:45 as we move forward. More Gwen and Chris on the way.
All right, welcome back to Gwen and Chris. Happy to be settling in with you here on a Thursday afternoon. 2:23 is the time. Tony Gwynn Jr. is in Arizona, Phoenix, with the Padres. They're getting set for a 3-game set against the Diamondbacks. It starts tomorrow night. If you missed it, Zach Gallen scratched from the start for Arizona. Always a problem. The milkman always seems to deliver against the Padres. He won't get that chance tomorrow night. Slade Ciccone, who I guess is one of their better prospects.
Slade Ciccone?
Yeah, he's going to be the starter for Arizona tomorrow night against Dylan Cease. Padres, of course, have Michael King on Saturday against Brandon Fott. Fott's, he's given the Padres some problems in the past, young right-hander. And then Sunday it'll be Mr. Waldron, who's pitched well for the Padres, finishing out the series against that always dangerous undecided for the Arizona Diamondbacks on Sunday's game.
TBD.
Huh? TBD. And then Tony and the gang will head to Chicago to face the Cubs next week. And then don't look now when the Padres get back home a week from tomorrow.
Dodgers.
The Dodgers are coming in here. But we'll talk plenty of Padre baseball. Also, a reminder, you can enjoy from 5 o'clock to 6 o'clock tonight. And if you missed it earlier, you'll want to make sure you catch our Padres roundtable recorded this morning at 10 a.m. with myself and Annie and Elston, and also Ben and Woods, all five of us talking Padre baseball, and a very good deep dive into the 5-game losing streak and now the 2-game win streak that has followed it and where the Padres go from here. So you Padre fans will definitely want to tune in. I want to remind you that you can find out what baseball is really like. Join a former Padre and MLB All-Star Brett Boone, his big league friends, on the podcast, the Boone Podcast. It's 3 days a week. Brett talks with Hall of Famers, fellow All-Stars friends, to get their take on today's game, relive some of their great stories from when they played. Glavine, Smoltz, Griffey, the list goes on and on. Follow the Boone Podcast in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcast. And we will talk baseball with AJ Cassavell of MLB.com shortly. But before all of that, the NBA playoffs continued last night. The Clippers are now on the doorstep. After an embarrassing, really, I mean, I know Kawhi Leonard's not playing, but you lose by 30 at home in game 5.
Yeah, especially after just getting that win at home, on the road,
right. You win game 4 there, and then you come home, and you just get clocked. So the series goes back to Dallas with the Mavericks now ahead 3-2. This comes one day after the Lakers were eliminated, and I wanted to get Tony's thoughts on this. I wanted to revisit this. We played it yesterday, I think. Was it yesterday or the day before, Scrape?
I think the day before.
It was the call of the Denver Nuggets radio announcer at the end of the game in which the Nuggets wrapped it up on the Jamal Murray shot. Now, he does mention, thankfully, he at least mentioned that Jamal Murray made the game-winning shot, but he really spent most of his time berating the officials, and in an extension, the Los Angeles La La Lakers, as they headed off into the offseason. I wanted to get Tony's thoughts on this because it made me angry, and I'm not even a Laker fan.
Yeah.
Oh, I was supposed to play that.
No, go ahead.
High right side is Jamal Murray, 9 on the shot clock. Denver looking for a game winner. Murray has it on the high right side. High pick from Jokic. Murray, jumper from 8. Got it again! 3.6 seconds left for the Lakers. LeBron over to Prince. Jumper's no good at the horn. And the L.A. Lakers can take that L on the way out, along with that whistle. Denver takes care of La La Land for the second game in a row. Might be the best win I've ever seen. The Los Angeles Lakers and their free throws can go back to La La Land.
All right, so you have it. I really can't believe that a professional broadcaster at the NBA level would use those phrases and that terminology on a series-clinching win, but he did.
First of all, I'll start by saying, obviously, I have a little bias here.
Yes, you do.
My team was on the other hand.
That's why we went to you here.
But this game was going on during one of the losses, I think, for the Padres.
Padre game,
right?
Yeah. It was Monday night. So.
It was Monday night. So the game is, you know, still going when I get into my car. So I'm have to listen to basically the last maybe 6 minutes of this game in my car. And that was very light compared to this guy during the actual clutch time of the game. This dude was almost as, I mean, he wasn't almost. He was basically saying during the broadcast that the refs were throwing the game. And that, I mean, this is, and I was like, my jaw was literally, my mouth was like wide open because I couldn't believe like some of the stuff. Like I know there's homers out there. Listen, the Celtics group for a long time, they had some homers, right? I understand that. But this guy, it wasn't just the referees he was on. I mean, anything that went the Lakers' way, he was like, basically saying the refs were cheating and that they were throwing the game. So that part right there was actually mild compared to what had happened the last 5 minutes of that game.
Yeah, it really deserves criticism because first of all, let's just take it from the Denver side. You're the Nuggets, you're the fan of the Nuggets, you're the owner of the Nuggets. You just had a great moment in your franchise's history. Jamal Murray hits a game-winning shot to eliminate the Lakers for the second year in a row, and you don't pay any credit to that at all. You don't have there's nothing at all about the greatness of what just happened for Denver. It's all about the other team, and you're crying about the officials. You're a broadcaster. You want to point out that one team has more free throws than the other. Fine, but it is not your job to cry during the broadcast.
Literally, wait, hold on. That's and if you go back and listen to it, you can see he ends up butchering the call at the end, right? Because he says Denver has taken out the Lakers for the second game in a row. They just lost to the Lakers the previous game in Los Angeles. So, which is how we got back to
he meant
to
the
Denver.
Second year in a row, but he was so busy whining and crying that he even messed up his own complaint.
Exactly.
It was really bad, Tony.
It was. I'm glad that I wasn't the only one that felt like that because I thought, you know, maybe I'm just irritated because the Lakers lost. But the more I thought about it, the more it brings me back to, and that's why I start. I actually text Scraby about it.
Yeah.
When it happened,
you were so
and
angry.
I didn't know. I didn't know if I was in my feelings, and maybe if it was different. Because the one thing I did learn is doing all the NFL. Rate the radio calls, is that there's a different type of broadcast in football than there is in baseball. Like, they're okay with the color man kind of chiming in there with some sound effects or stepping on the call, whatever it is. It doesn't seem like it's a big deal. So I reserved my judgment. But then I started asking other people about who were in the broadcast game about basketball. I was like, nah, I mean, it's pretty much the same thing, you know, same rules apply. And I don't know, maybe it's because we come from, or at least I grew up listening to broadcasters that were, you knew they were rooting for their home team, but they also gave some type of neutrality in terms of being in the center as in the rest of the broadcast, right? Like, you could point out some of these things and make it be known that your team is not getting the benefit of the whistle. But the way he was doing it was like he was crying on the air.
And I kind of enjoyed it. The hell out of me.
No, you didn't. You honestly didn't enjoy it. I got to tell you, I believe the guy's name is Jason Kosmicki.
Yes.
You know, honestly, you're an embarrassment, Jason.
I think they're rallying behind this.
You embarrassed yourself. You embarrassed your franchise, frankly. And you didn't pay enough credit to what your own team accomplished by winning in a thrilling moment on another great shot by Jamal Murray to advance the Nuggets.
You almost forget that he made a shot at the end because of all that.
I know.
Maybe it's just they hate the Lakers that much, and that's what they want in terms of that fan base.
What tells me that they're not embarrassed by this is the posting on social media, the pin tweeting at the top of their Twitter page.
Yes, they wanted everybody to hear this.
They want people to know about this.
That's right. They wanted everybody to hear this. So, you know what? Denver, good for you, but you guys are very, very minor league. I mean, that's a minor league call.
The next, I'm gonna actually listen to some of his calls now, moving forward, to see if he cry like this.
Sure hope that Anthony Edwards stuffs them in the next round.
Oh, me too.
Let him deal with
it. I hope the Jokic brothers come after you, though, Chris.
I'll say one thing: I know that Jokic or Murray or Michael Malone has never complained about a call before, so you know. They've got that going.
Right.
I mean, it's a bunch of hogwash is what it is.
Jokic does the two-hand plead.
He's a pleader.
He's
a two-hand pleader. And if you want...
We got a pleader!
Look, if you want to say that the Lakers got more free throws than Denver, that's accurate. That's stating a fact. Nobody's going to argue with that. But... let's go back through every game that Denver played in the postseason last year and make sure that they didn't get more free throws than somebody else in one of those games, in which the refs might have been cheating for them. It's so ludicrous. And you know what? The storyline is so old. I mean, honestly, this notion that this started in the 80s, Tony, that the NBA wanted the Lakers, wanted the Celtics, wanted the Knicks, and refereed against every other team on purpose so that they would win. This is 40 years old. We've been hearing it that long, and guess what? All these other teams have won NBA championships interim.
I was going to say, can we please get back to that again so that the Lakers can get back to some more finals soon? I would appreciate it. Thank you.
All right, we'll take a break. More Gwynn and Chris. A good one today underway on 97.3 The Fan.
2:41 on the clock. Tony Gwynn Jr., Chris Ello, Matthew Scraby. We're with you till actually 5 o'clock. I lied. I know you want us for that extra hour, but we've got something. I don't know if it's better, but it certainly will have your ears perked up.
It's becoming a hit around town.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, the Roundtable get many compliments about it.
How about that? The Roundtable.
They like it, Tony.
On the rise. We'll have that Roundtable for you at 5 o'clock, so you only have to put up with us three until 5 o'clock. All right, that being said, AJ Cassavelt, who had been away for good reason for a while, joins us here on Gwynn and Chris. AJ, first... how are you? Are you on this trip? And how is your sleep patterns going right now?
To answer those questions in order, I am doing great, as well as I've ever done. I'm extremely happy to be a dad, and it's been awesome. I am not on the trip. I'm going back on one more week of paternity leave starting tomorrow. Okay. So I've got a few days off where I get to hang out on the couch and watch Padres baseball with my son. And I don't even remember the last question already. Oh, it was about my sleep schedule, which should tell you pretty much all you need to know.
But you
know what? Like the lack of sleep, I'm a big fan of sleep. I think we all are. And I kind of wondered how this would all go. And you know what? It's fine. It's for a good reason. I don't like if I'm waking up in the middle of the night for my son. That's I guess the best reason possible.
I gotta tell you guys who don't get to see AJ as often as I do. I don't know if men glow, but this man is glowing. He is smiles from ear to ear being a new dad. So congratulations on that, AJ.
Thank you.
And a good thing.
Really appreciate it.
Yeah, and a good thing that you're in journalism, AJ, because Manny Machado went on paternity leave, and it wasn't as lengthy as yours is. So I think, you know, you've lucked out in that
regard. We have different jobs. I think the replacement level writer, like we have other people who can fill in admirably. I'm not sure the Padres necessarily do for Manny Machado at third base.
The replacement level writer that can come in. All right. Well, AJ, congrats from all of us, certainly. And enjoy fatherhood. This Padre ball club, you know, these two wins, I don't know that they covered up a lot of ills, but they sure made everybody feel a lot better heading into this road trip. When you look at the first 34 games, what stands out to you as being something really good and something that you're really concerned about?
Yeah, and just to be clear, I was calling myself the replacement level writer. The guys that started.
Oh, okay.
I think we had it.
So for the first kind of 34 games of the season, I think like it's easy to overreact to some small sample size things, and so I think like some of the concerns maybe with the rotation, I would think are out of context just because of the track record of these guys and who they are. But like the concerning part for me is what's going on with Xander Bogaerts, maybe to a lesser extent Ha-Seon Kim, but Bogaerts obviously with the contract that he has left and with the fact that he's already switched to second base and that diminishes his value a little bit. And the fact that he's just not hitting the ball hard, like the guy that we know that we've seen in Boston for all those years. Like you want to see that kind of like that needs to turn around. I think that on the positive side, some of the production that the Padres aren't necessarily getting from guys like Fernando Tatis Jr. and Manny Machado, like those guys have hit the ball pretty hard lately, and I think they've hit into some rough batted ball luck. And the fact that those guys maybe have underperformed what their career standards are, and the Padres are still winning games, partly because of Jurickson Profar at the top of that lineup, because their bullpen's been pretty good. I think you can reasonably expect those guys with the underlying numbers and the hard hit rate and all those things and just who they are, they're two of the best hitters in the game. I would expect that the production the Padres are getting from Jurickson Profar at the top and from some of the younger guys at the bottom, if that continues alongside those two guys being who I think we all know they are, the Padres offense should be in a pretty good place in a league that's down offensively this year in general.
AJ, I got to ask you because you and I didn't get a chance to you know kind of bat this around as we often do. What did you think of Mike Shildt's decision to take the run off the board and load the bases for Manny?
I think it's kind of twofold, and it's interesting because like there's the math part of the equation, and then there's the human part of the equation, and I think both of them kind of back what Mike Shildt did. The math slightly leans in Shildt's favor there. You're expected to score more runs in an inning if you take bases loaded one out over man on second two outs. I think it's maybe 0.2 of a run. So it's close enough where if Manny Machado is not the next guy due up, if you're at the bottom of the lineup or something, you could say, we'll take the run. We're fine with that. But then you've got Manny Machado who has 12 grand slams and has like a 1,200 career OPS with the bases loaded. He's the guy that you want up in that situation. And it can't have been as easy as Mike Shildt says it was of a decision to make, even knowing that the math supports him and even knowing that you have Manny Machado due up, because at the time, this was a team that was struggling, had lost five straight games, was struggling to score runs, and you get a run and take it off the board. Mike Shildt said the decision was easy afterwards. I don't know that, at least it wouldn't have been easy for me to do. And that's even understanding the math and what that all means. But Manny Machado made it pay off. I think I went back and looked at there's different run expectancy kind of charts if you really want to get into the nerd aspect of it all. But there's what your likelihood is of scoring at all in the inning. And there's basically a 1 in 3 chance that when you take that run off the board that you're not going to score a run. That's a very real possibility. If that had happened, I still think it's the right decision because you're putting your faith in one of your best hitters and because the math on the other side of it supports you. So on both sides of it, I'm good with that decision.
If easy equals fast, then I believe him. Because he didn't have a whole lot of time to think about that. Like it was,
sure.
I'm sure the pitch before, he didn't go, man, if Cronenworth gets a catcher's interference here. These are my options. What should I do here? He had to pick it pretty quick. So, you know, it's interesting, though, that the numbers end up backing him up as that pertains to it. But, AJ, I want to get back to the starting rotation because they had a bad round the last time through. They get Yu Darvish back. He throws the ball well. Joe seemed to be on his game in yesterday's ball game. Starting pitching is going to be at least the thing that they have to hang their hat on a consistent basis, right?
Yeah, I think so. And like, if that's why the last turn through the rotation, if they're losing games because of their starting pitching consistently, that's not a good sign, because this rotation should be kind of the bedrock of their success going forward. So
yeah.
I think what you saw in the turnaround is maybe more indicative of what this rotation can be. I was kind of fascinated by Joe Musgrove's answer after the game yesterday. We asked him, because that was one of the worst starts I've ever seen Joe Musgrove have as a Padre against the Phillies on Friday night. They were squaring up just about everything. And he said, after that game, he said it was a lot of misplaced locations. The stuff was okay. But he wanted to make some mechanical fixes. But everyone kind of hears that, like, you got to make a mechanical fix. But it's not that easy when you're in a stretch of 13 games in 13 days, and he's starting every fifth day, and that the bullpen session in between the starts, you got to kind of temper it a little bit because you don't want to overexert yourself because you're pitching as much as you are. And I guess Musgrove, and probably in coordination with Ruben Niebla, made the decision that they were going to say, screw that. Like, we're going to work hard in this bullpen session. We're going to work hard between starts. And if I'm tired on the mound for Wednesday's game, if I feel up and I feel tired, that's okay, because I will have figured out mechanically what the issue is, and I'll pitch through it. And so essentially, that's what Musgrove said yesterday. He said he entered that start feeling pretty tired, but feeling comfortable in those mechanics and having made those adjustments. And that's key going forward to him. I mean, he has to be an integral part of this rotation. The Padres are paying him to be. He's been that guy in the past. He's a vocal leader in the clubhouse. And if he's pitching like he did during the first month of the season, that doesn't bode well. I think he's gotten off to some slow starts in the past. Obviously, there's questions about that shoulder. If this was just one of those slow starts and now you get the Musgrove that you expect, that's a really good sign for the Padres.
A lot of times we talk about the manager having to think, you know, beyond the game that he's in. This is an instance where a player is having to think beyond this one particular start, looking ahead, as AJ said, to try to get himself right so he can be consistent for a longer period of time.
Yeah, and that's the way Joe Musgrove views it. And I don't know that he's figured everything out. He might get out there in his next start and kind of revert back to the guy from the first month, but it looked yesterday like what we've come to expect from Joe Musgrove in San Diego.
The new dad, A.J. Cassavell, MLB.com, is our guest here on Gwen and Chris. A.J., with Manny going back to third base, or at least for, you know, the better part of it now, you're going to see him at third base. The DH slot is kind of something that needs to be filled. You wrote about Graham Pauly today on MLB.com. People can go there and read your story. To me, this kid is really scuffling. The average is 125. Yeah. He hasn't drawn a walk yet. 4-for-32. He's struggling to, you know, play one day, not play another day. Is he going to be best served staying here and playing part-time, or do they have to think about, you know, getting him back to a full-time basis at AAA? And I guess the bigger question is, what are they going to do at DH? Are we going to see Donovan Solano, do you think, soon, or where do they go here?
Yeah, I think Paulie, like, they have to be thinking about that right now. I don't know whether it's a move that they'll pull in the next couple days, but We saw Grant Pauly last season and what he did in the minors. He might have been the system's best hitter. He has played every day, pretty much every season. He did it in college. He did it in his first pro season. He did it last year in his first full pro season. It is a hard adjustment for a guy who has played every day his entire life to start coming off the bench, playing sporadically, pinch hitting, DHing. It's an adjustment, and I talked to him about that yesterday, and he's a positive guy. He's excited to kind of learn about making that adjustment, and he wants to do it in the big league because he wants to kind of soak in big league baseball. He wants to help the Padres win. That's the mindset I would want to have. I would want a player to have if I'm the Padres. That being said, the Padres need to look big picture and think, if this is a guy that can really help us in the future, because we really like the outlook of what his bat is, but it's not quite ready, which at times so far this season, it's looked not quite ready for the big leagues. Like, what is the best avenue for that? And so I if I had to guess, and I don't know what is coming in the next few days, but with Machado at third base, maybe you can get him a few more regular at bats. Maybe you can give him a chance to find that rhythm that he talked about. But if it doesn't come, then you got to start looking at your other options. And I also think there's a ton of benefit to using that DH spot. They've ridden their regulars pretty hard defensively this season. So if you can use that DH spot to give, I don't know, Tatis a day, Kim a day, Cronenworth a day, where they're hitting, but they're not necessarily playing the field and they're not on their feet the whole time. Like, there's value in that. And with Manny Machado back at third base, like, there's also value in giving him a couple DH days here and there because he's coming off that injury, coming off that surgery. So different ways to look at the DH spot. I think Donovan Solano could be in that mix soon. I don't know exactly when. But right now, in an ideal world, I think Grant Pauly starts raking, and he's that guy. But it just doesn't look like it's quite there yet for him at the big league level.
AJ, as always, man, we're going to let you slide off and get back to your baby boy. I know you're excited to do that, and hopefully catch you on the next road trip. I'll see you when we get back home, actually. We'll do this again.
All right, looking forward to
Thanks
it, guys.
So much, Thanks so
much, I'm good to be back.
Very
AJ
good.
AJ Cassavell, MLB.com, covers the Padres. Yeah, man, that DH thing is, I think, going to result in a move at some point. I don't know what it's going to be, but I think the Padres actually go out and do something when it's all said and done in order to address it. When that is, I'm not sure. But I think Graham is, you know, he's same thing. He's learning at the big league level.
Not easy.
We just watched the number one prospect in the big league, in the minor leagues, come up and go one for whatever it was before he would sit down.
I think it was like 530.
Jackson Holliday.
And Jackson Holliday.
Yeah.
And so, like, you know, that's
Yeah, Wyatt Langford's the other big one for Texas. He has one home run this year, and that was inside
the Parker. It was inside the Parker, yeah.
I mean, he had to hit one out, and he hit like six in spring training. So
the big leagues is real. There's very few Tatises of the world that just come up and, like, just kill it. It just doesn't happen. No matter, even if you're the number one prospect, it's different for everybody. So we'll see how it rolls. We got more Gwen and Chris coming your way. A little Daily Gambit on the other side. We'll see where the bets be like. More Gwen and Chris on the way. AJ Cassavell, who had been away for good reason for a while, joins us here on Gwen and Chris. AJ, first, how are you? Are you on this trip? And how is your sleep patterns going right now?
To answer those questions in order, I am doing great, as well as I've ever done. I'm extremely happy to be a dad, and it's been awesome. I am not on the trip. I'm going back on one more week of paternity leave starting tomorrow. Okay. So I've got a few days off where I get to hang out on the couch and watch Padres baseball with my son. And I don't even remember the last question already. Oh, it was about my sleep schedule, which should tell you pretty much all you need to know. But you know what? Like, the lack of sleep, I'm a big fan of sleep. I think we all are. And I kind of wondered how this would all go. And you know what? It's fine. It's for a good reason. I don't, like, if I'm waking up in the middle of the night for my son, that's I guess the best reason possible.
I got to tell you guys who don't get to see AJ as often as I do. I don't know if men glow, but this man is glowing. He is smiles from ear to ear being a new dad. So congratulations on that, AJ.
Thank you.
And a good
Thank
thing.
You. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, and a good thing that you're in journalism, AJ, because Manny Machado went on paternity leave, and it wasn't as lengthy as yours is. So I think, you know, you've lucked out in
that regard. We have different jobs. I think my replacement level writer, like, we have other people who can fill in admirably. I'm not sure the Padres necessarily do for Manny Machado at third base.
The replacement level writer that can come in. All right. Well, AJ, congrats from all of us, certainly, and enjoy fatherhood. This Padre ball club, you know, these two wins, I don't know that they covered up a lot of ills But they sure made everybody feel a lot better heading into this road trip. When you look at the first 34 games, what stands out to you as being something really good and something that you're really concerned about?
Yeah, and just to be clear, I was calling myself the replacement level writer. The guys that
oh, okay.
I think we had it.
So for the first kind of 34 games of the season, I think like it's easy to overreact to some small sample size things, and so I think like some of the concerns maybe with the rotation I would think are out of context just because of the track record of these guys and who they are. But like the concerning part for me is what's going on with Xander Bogaerts, maybe to a lesser extent Ha-Sung Kim, but Bogaerts obviously with the contract that he has left and with the fact that he's already switched to second base and that diminishes his value a little bit and the fact that he's just not hitting the ball hard like the guy that we know that we've seen in Boston for all those years. Like you want to see that kind of like that needs to turn around. I think that on the positive side, some of the production that the Padres aren't necessarily getting from guys like Fernando Tatis Jr. and Manny Machado, like those guys have hit the ball pretty hard lately, and I think they've hit into some rough batted ball luck. And the fact that those guys maybe have underperformed what their career standards are, and the Padres are still winning games, partly because of Jurickson and Profar at the top of that lineup, because their bullpen's been pretty good. I think you can reasonably expect those guys with the underlying numbers and the hard hit rate and all those things, and just who they are. They're two of the best hitters in the game. I would expect that the production the Padres are getting from Jurickson and Profar at the top and from some of the younger guys at the bottom, if that continues alongside those two guys being who I think we all know they are, the Padres offense should be in a pretty good place in a league that's down offensively this year in general.
AJ, I got to ask you, because you and I didn't get a chance to kind of bat this around as we often do. What did you think of Mike Schilt's decision to take the run off the board and load the bases for Manny?
I think it's kind of twofold, and it's interesting because like there's the math part of the equation, and then there's the human part of the equation, and I think both of them kind of back what Mike Schilt did. The math slightly leans in Schilt's favor there. You're expected to score more runs in an inning if you take bases loaded one out over man on second two outs. I think it's maybe 0.2 of a run. So it's close enough where if Manny Machado is not the next guy due up, if you're at the bottom of the lineup or something, you could say, we'll take the run. We're fine with that. But then you've got Manny Machado, who has 12 grand slams and has like a 1,200 career OPS with the bases loaded. He's the guy that you want up in that situation. And it can't have been as easy as Mike Schilt says it was of a decision to make, even knowing that the math supports him and even knowing that you have Manny Machado due up, because at the time, this was a team that was struggling, had lost five straight games, was struggling to score runs, and you get a run and take it off the board. Mike Schilt said the decision was easy afterwards. I don't know that, at least it wouldn't have been easy for me to do. And that's even understanding the math and what that all means. But Manny Machado made it pay off. I think I went back and looked at there's different run expectancy kind of charts if you really want to get into the nerd aspect of it all. But there's what your likelihood is of scoring at all in the inning. And there's basically a 1 in 3 chance that when you take that run off the board that you're not going to score a run. That's a very real possibility. If that had happened, I still think it's the right decision because you're putting your faith in one of your best hitters and because the math on the other side of it supports you. So on both sides of it, I'm good with that decision.
If easy equals fast, then I believe him. Because he didn't have a whole lot of time to think about that. Like it was,
sure.
I'm sure the pitch before, he didn't go, man, if Cronenworth gets a catcher's interference here. These are my options. What should I do here? He had to pick it pretty quick. So, it's interesting, though, that the numbers end up backing him up as that pertains to it. But, AJ, I want to get back to the starting rotation because they had a bad round the last time through. They get Yu Darvish back. He throws the ball well. Joe seemed to be on his game in yesterday's ball game. Starting pitching is going to be at least the thing that they have to hang their hat on a consistent basis, right?
Yeah, I think so. And like, if that's why the last turn through the rotation, if they're losing games because of their starting pitching consistently, that's not a good sign because this rotation should be kind of the bedrock of their success going forward. So
yeah.
I think what you saw in the turnaround is maybe more indicative of what this rotation can be. I was kind of fascinated by Joe Musgrove's answer after the game yesterday. We asked him, because that was one of the worst starts I've ever seen Joe Musgrove have as a Padre against the Phillies on Friday night. They were squaring up just about everything. And he said, after that game, he said it was a lot of misplaced locations and stuff was okay. But he wanted to make some mechanical fixes. But everyone kind of hears that, like, you got to make a mechanical fix. But it's not that easy when you're in a stretch of 13 games in 13 days and he's starting every fifth day, and that the bullpen session in between the starts, you got to kind of temper it a little bit because you don't want to overexert yourself because you're pitching as much as you are. And I guess Musgrove, and probably in coordination with Ruben Niebla, made the decision that they were going to say, screw that. Like, we're going to work hard in this bullpen session. We're going to work hard between starts. And if I'm tired on the mound for Wednesday's game, if I feel up and I feel tired, that's okay, because I will have figured out mechanically what the issue is, and I'll pitch through it. So essentially, that's what Musgrove said yesterday. He said he entered that start feeling pretty tired, but feeling comfortable in those mechanics and having made those adjustments, and that's key going forward to him. I mean, he has to be an integral part of this rotation. The Padres are paying him to be. He's been that guy in the past. He's a vocal leader in the clubhouse, and if he's pitching like he did during the first month of the season, that doesn't bode well. I think he's gotten off to some slow starts in the past. Obviously, there's questions about that shoulder. If this was just one of those slow starts and now you get the Musgrove that you expect, that's a really good sign for the Padres.
A lot of times we talk about the manager having to think, you know, beyond the game that he's in. This is an instance where a player is having to think beyond this one particular start, looking ahead, as AJ said, to try to get himself right so he can be consistent for a longer period of time.
Yeah, and that's the way Joe Musgrove views it. And I don't know that he's figured everything out. He might get out there in his next start and kind of revert back to the guy from the first month, but it looked yesterday like what we've come to expect from Joe Musgrove in San Diego.
The new dad, A.J. Cassavell, MLB.com, is our guest here on Gwen and Chris. A.J., with Manny going back to third base, or at least for, you know, the better part of it now, we're going to see him at third base. The DH slot is kind of something that needs to be filled. You wrote about Graham Pauly today on MLB.com. People can go there and read your story. To me, this kid is really scuffling. The average is 125. Yeah. He hasn't drawn a walk yet. 4 for 32. He's struggling to, you know, play one day, not play another day. Is he going to be best served staying here and playing part-time, or do they have to think about, you know, getting him back to a full-time basis at AAA? And I guess the bigger question is, what are they going to do at DH? Are we going to see Donovan Solano, do you think, soon, or where do they go here?
Yeah, I think Pauly, like, they have to be thinking about that right now. I don't know whether it's a move that they'll pull in the next couple days, but we saw Graham Pauly last season and what he did in the minors. He might have been the system's best hitter. He has played every day, pretty much every season. He did it in college. He did it in his first pro season. He did it last year in his first full pro season. It is a hard adjustment for a guy who has played every day his entire life to start coming off the bench, playing sporadically, pinch hitting, DHing. It's an adjustment, and I talked to him about that yesterday, and he's a positive guy. He's excited to kind of learn about making that adjustment, and he wants to do it in the big league because he wants to kind of soak in big league baseball. He wants to help the Padres win. That's the mindset I would want to have. I would want a player to have if I'm the Padres. That being said, the Padres need to look big picture and think, if this is a guy that can really help us in the future, because we really like the outlook of what his bat is, but it's not quite ready, which at times so far this season it's looked not quite ready for the big leagues. Like, what is the best avenue for that? And so if I had to guess, and I don't know what is coming in the next few days, but with Machado at third base, maybe you can get him a few more regular at bats. Maybe you can give him a chance to find that rhythm that he talked about. But if it doesn't come, then you got to start looking at your other options. And I also think there's a ton of benefit to using that DH spot. They've ridden their regulars pretty hard defensively this season. So if you can use that DH spot to give, I don't know, Tatis a day, Kim a day, Cronenworth a day, where they're hitting, but they're not necessarily playing the field and they're not on their feet the whole time. Like, there's value in that. And with Manny Machado back at third base, like, there's also value in giving him a couple DH days here and there, because he's coming off that injury, he's coming off that surgery. So different ways to look at the DH spot. I think Donovan Solano could be in that mix soon. I don't know exactly when. But right now, in an ideal world, I think Grant Pauly starts raking, and he's that guy. But it just doesn't look like it's quite there yet for him at the big league level.
AJ, as always, man, we're going to let you slide off and get back to your baby boy. I know you're excited to do that, and hopefully catch you on the next road trip. I'll see you when we get back home, actually. We'll do this again.
All right. Looking forward to
Thanks
it, guys.
So much,
Thanks
so
I'm going to be back.
Very
AJ
good.
AJ Cassavell, MLB.com, covers the Padres. Yeah, man, that DH thing is, I think, going to result in a move at some point. I don't know what it's going to be, but I think the Padres actually go out and do something when it's all said and done in order to address it. When that is, I'm not sure. But I think Graham is, you know, he's same thing. He's learning at the big league level.
Not easy.
We just watched the number one prospect in the big league, in the minor leagues, come up and go one for whatever it was before he would sit down.
I think it was like 530.
Jackson Holliday.
And Jackson Holliday.
Yeah.
And so, like, you know, that's...
Wyatt Langford's the other big one for Texas. He has one home run this year, and that was inside the park.
It was inside the Parker, yeah. I mean,
he just had to hit one out, and he hit like six in spring training. So
the big leagues is real. There's very few Tatises of the world that just come up and, like, just kill it. It just doesn't happen. No matter, even if you're the number one prospect, it's different for everybody. So we'll see how it rolls. We got more Gwen and Chris coming your way. A little Daily Gambit on the other side. We'll see where the bets be like. More Gwen and Chris on the way.